In a startling turn of phrase, St. Paul reflects on the unexpected generosity of our God. He says that though our Lord Jesus Christ was rich, he became poor so that by his poverty we might become rich. What a beautiful and unexpected truth it is that in the pouring out of God's very life on the cross for love of us, we have become recipients, inheritors of all that the Father has given to us. And then we are reminded that we are also stewards of what we have been given. And the real question that rises in our hearts through this gospel is, will we likewise then become sharers, givers of that same kind of generosity that we have received from the Father? I invite you to turn your attention to the screens as we reflect on the marvelous generosity of our God. 2 weeks ago, as we began our reflection on this great theme of unexpected in our lives, unexpected in our world, unexpected from our God, I reflected on the parable of the prodigal son, reflecting that a world that becomes estranged and distant from God is inevitably a world of separated brothers. There is an insulating effect on our hearts as we remember back to that parable of the prodigal son. As one son left, but the other son stayed home, but hardened his heart against his father. It's a detail that we often miss, that the two brothers never met. They never truly encountered each other. A world that is distant from God is a world separated from each other, brother against brother. And it is only the reconciling, generous love of the Father, only embrace of the Father's arms that stands open for all the world, that is powerful enough to reconcile brother and brother. As we sustain our reflection in these coming weeks on this theme of unexpected, I think it's profound that we would sit here, that we would be here, that we would be attentive to what it was that St. Paul spoke of, that through the great wealth of God and his generosity, he became poor so that by his poverty we might become rich. As we look at that first reading from the prophet Amos, written a mere 2,700 years ago, we have a very contemporary description of our lives. I love the words, their choice words, complacency, comfort. They devise their own entertainment. It reminds me of an advertisement, I don't know if I've seen it or if I'm just imagining it, for iTunes. Somebody walking through life with the earbuds in, with a soundtrack for their lives. Inattentive to those that they're riding on the subway with, inattentive to the one that they walk by on the street. And we see so readily how abundance can lead us down a path of a failure to be grateful, and how extravagance can lead us down a path of wastefulness, that thoughtless living ultimately leads to an insulated life of selfishness and an inability even to feel the pain and the misery of another. I'd like to turn to the gospel and reflect on the fact that once again we have two brothers that are estranged. We have the rich man and we have the poor man. We have an outsider and we have an insider. And death comes at the end for both. And there is a reversal in that death. There is a way in which we see the rift and division that existed between them in this life inevitably exists in the life to come, because they were brothers that were separated, profoundly insulated from each other. I think it's a beautiful detail, and I have encouraged you and will continue to encourage you in these coming weeks to follow with us in reading and reflecting and praying through these scriptures, because the Lord has so much for us. And I think the details are so telling and revealing. I like the detail, in fact, that it wasn't as if the rich man didn't know the name of the poor man. In fact, he did. He called out to Father Abraham, "Send Lazarus. Send the very one that I refused to be merciful toward on an errand of mercy to me." And I love that detail, that he knew the name of the man that he had walked by so many times. I'm not here to condemn that rich man. Of course, it's God's place alone to judge, since he sees into the heart. But that little detail that the name of the poor man Lazarus was known means to me that he had taken an initial step to humanize that person that he saw. At some point or another, maybe he heard tell of this man and his name. Maybe he did stoop down at one point. Maybe he felt that he had been betrayed earlier by attempting to reach out and finding that reaching out was betrayed. However it happened, he knew the name of that man. And doesn't that make it even more staggering that his heart was closed, that rift was created, and that ultimately he was not willing to be a brother to the man lying at his door? I love the second reading. I love it because it describes the way that God is so far off, that he dwells in unapproachable light. No human being can see that God. And yet our God is one who identifies himself with the poor. Remember what John said in his first letter. We lie if we say we love God but hate our brother. Because whoever does not love a brother whom he can see cannot love God whom he has not seen. Dorothy Day put it like this: I really only love God as much as I love the person that I love least. And the works of mercy truly are testing ground for us to ask that question. Does the love of God abide in our hearts? Are we willing to encounter our brothers and sisters? I'd like to tell a story about my arrival in Rome. It was 2009, and I began my studies and formation for priesthood there at the North American College. A new city, a new country, a new place to live. The work of the seminary early on in our first weeks was to orientate us to the language, to the culture, to show us where we could get gelato, to show us where we could find those necessities like peanut butter that's very hard to come by in Italy, to find our way so that we knew how to do our laundry, so that we knew how to call our families, all of those very important tasks of orientation. But there was one day of orientation that I will never forget. They brought in a recent graduate from the North American. He's now a priest in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And he wanted to orientate us to the presence of the poor in the city. I will never forget that day for as long as I live. This particular priest is one who had come to be known for a great love of the poor. In fact, he had been gone some years from Rome. He'd returned to serve in Pittsburgh. And yet the poor continued to ask, do you know him? Do you remember him? Can you send a greeting to him? It was beautiful. He actually spent vacations and went and lived alongside the poor in some of these shanty towns, worked to regularize marriages, worked to baptize children, to teach the faith. This particular priest had a beautiful heart for the poor. But I remember one thing he said. He said, gentlemen, every day as you walk to class, you will walk by beggars in the street. At the door of every church in the city are two or three beggars, and they're likely not going to be gone when you leave. The poor you will always have with me, as Jesus said. He said, you have a choice as you walk through the streets. You can ignore, you can be dubious, you can harden your hearts. But if that happens, your hearts will become so hard that you will not be able to receive or give the love of God. And so this was his recommendation. He said, wrestle with the idea of loving the poor. Be uncomfortable with your efforts to love the poor. Be willing to feel the roughness of their hands. Look them in the eye. Embrace them. Feel overwhelmed by their need. Realize how little you can do to help them. Realize the limitations of your love. Realize what it is to be lied to, even to be taken advantage of, but to love anyway. Realize what it is to come face to face in looking into the face and the eyes of the poor to your own poverty. What a beautiful thing it is that the poor are present in the world to remind us that we ourselves have been recipients. And as I remember Monica and Antonio and Giovanni and Maria, I remember my own inadequacies, my own wrestling, my own uncomfort with loving and striving to know and be attentive to the poor as brothers and sisters. And I'm not here at all to hold myself up as an example. I struggled with it each and every day. When I often got back in the seminary, I went to the chapel and said, Lord, help me. I don't know how to see these as brothers and sisters. But I knew that invitation had been given. I knew that I did not want my heart to become hard. And so I make an invitation as well. In this reflection on the unexpected generosity of God, our invitation to you, to all of us, is that we would plan to be generous. We never know what it is to be generous, and the feeling that we experience in truly encountering brothers and sisters unless we try it. And that's my invitation to you, simply to try it, simply to be awakened, to be sensitized to the needs of our brothers and sisters. I want to give three simple points about how you can plan to be generous. You know, Jesus says we ought to love our neighbor, and our neighbor is a concrete person with a name. We often begin and abstract from our neighbor, but I remember one thing Mother Teresa once said. She said, if you cannot love the person sitting with you at breakfast, there is no hope that you will love the person in the slum of India. It begins in the concrete. You have a next door neighbor. You have someone across the street. And if you say to me, Father, they're not poor in the same way that Lazarus was, I will ask you, do you know that? Perhaps there is a poverty in their lives that you have not been attentive to, that we have missed because we have been insulated. But to be attentive to the human needs and to never settle for distancing ourselves, it's not the kind of charity that we're called to add 99 cents on a purchase at the store for charity. But we need that human-to-human contact. We need to feel the roughness of another's hand. We need to look them in the eye. And we need to feel overwhelmed by the need and the limitations of our love. So start with your neighbor. It's a beautiful place to begin, but each of us have a neighbor, and we cannot overlook them as we look beyond to some other need. Second, I would invite you to some sacrificial giving. It's been said over and over again, but why can we not be willing to deny ourselves something so that someone else can have it? Why are we not willing to do with less so that someone can have more? Again, many here are generous, but I wanted to remind you and remind myself of my experience at the University of St. Thomas. I was a Knight of Columbus. I knew college students didn't have much cash. Most of them were in debt. And so I realized that what they did have was winter clothing. And I remember being out on the campus, out on the quad, and inviting many students to give up a hat, to give up nice warm mittens, and ask them, would you be willing to give that up so that someone else could be warm? And I think as they took that off, as they looked deep within their heart and said, I could probably do that, they felt the pain of the cold just for a fleeting moment. And they probably went home and there was a closet that maybe had another hat and another pair of mittens. But in that simple burst of cold air, they came to experience the invitation the Lord makes to give sacrificially. And then finally, I want to encourage you, this is the third point, don't ever give too little. We so often settle for something less than giving Christ. But I'm reminded by Peter in the Acts of the Apostles. A man was asking for alms outside the temple of Jerusalem. And Peter said, I don't have any gold or silver to give you, but in the name of Christ, rise and walk. Peter that day encouraged that man in faith. He encouraged that man to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Sometimes as I'm sitting on an off-ramp, again, this isn't to put myself on a pedestal, I'd simply give a few dollars, but I tuck in the middle a holy card, an encouragement to pray, an encouragement to trust, an encouragement that Jesus is with the poor in their very need. Let us plan, my brothers and sisters, to be generous. Let us plan and be attentive to those who are in need, because a world that is distant from God is inevitably distant from itself, a world estranged with brothers and sisters who do not know each other and their needs. Let us plan to be generous. Let us try it and discover therein the beautiful invitation to receive from the generosity of God, but to give freely from what it is that we have received.